This may seem contradictory, but I see 2016 as a year of division and a year of unity and a year of opportunity. I'll explain why.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, one reader found this a little bit interesting when I said that I see this year as being a year of division, a year of unity, and a year of opportunity. Dan said on Facebook, so a bit like the weatherman saying tomorrow we'll have sunshine with showers and a chance of snow. No, not quite, but I thought that was a cute comment. I want to explain some of what I see coming in 2016. I want to alert you to certain problems that are at hand. I want to alert you to things that I see coming that I sense that we can have a constructive answer to. This is Michael Brown, a blessed, happy new year, our first day live in 2016. We played a special broadcast, Lessons in Courage from Jeremiah, on Friday on New Year's Day. In fact, I slept in New Year's Day, was having a relaxed, productive day at home. And I actually thought it was Saturday, January 2nd. I skipped a day in my mind somehow and then realized, no, it's January 1st. So this is my first day back with you live. A blessed, happy new year to you. If you want to weigh in on any of the subjects we discussed, this is not a day just to call in with any Bible questions you have. Later in the week, we'll get to that. But anything you want to weigh in on in any areas that I discuss or bring up, feel free to call in. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I've got a bunch of things to discuss with you, ranging from what's happening in the Muslim world between Saudi Arabia and Iran, comments from Dr. Ben Carson's business manager, Armstrong Williams, that I found very unfortunate. He's a strong conservative voice, but I found his comments very unfortunate. I never told you about what happened with me and The Daily Show on the Comedy Channel, Comedy Central, last year. Well, what didn't happen because of choices we make. I want to talk to you about some free speech issues as well and the exacerbation of race issues here in America. 866-34-TRUTH. And Twitter has some new policies. Are these going to help or are these going to hurt? Twitter is talking about cracking down on hate speech, cracking down on tweets that promote violence, that directly attack individuals, etc. Overall, I agree this is something that should be done, but how it plays out is the big question. And will religious conservatives end up being attacked more than any by Twitter? In other words, singled out because of our views. I posted a question on Twitter, so if you're on my Twitter feed, that's at Dr. Michael L. Brown, Dr. Michael L. Brown. I tweeted this out. Do you believe Twitter will be fair in monitoring hate speech, or will conservatives be targeted? I left a word out there now that I see it. That's what happens when you try to condense it to 140 characters or less. So far, on my feed, now again, these are largely conservative folks that are on my Twitter feed, this is the response. Do you believe Twitter will be fair in monitoring hate speech, or will conservatives be targeted? 91% thus far, just out of 80 votes, but 91% say they believe Twitter will be unfair. Is there increasing censorship coming to religious conservatives on Twitter? Will Twitter be like Facebook and single out those who take issue with LGBT activism and let people bash away in every possible way, let them bash away when it comes to religious faith? We shall see. 866-34-TRUTH. We come back, I want to lay out the overview of some of what I see coming in the year 2016.
The It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on this first day of the new year that we're live on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Again, I'm not taking Bible questions and things like that. The only calls I'll be taking today are calls that relate to the subjects that I bring up. You can weigh in, you can raise questions, you can add your viewpoint, you can challenge mine, 866-34-TRUTH. You can read my latest article by going to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and click on latest article. And it's called 2016, A Year of Division, Unity, and Opportunity. I said that last year would be a year of pushback, not the only thing that would happen, but a time when believers would be standing up and pushing back against a lot of the negative things happening in society, a lot of the things going in the wrong direction. We've seen that, of course, through the year. And some of the political candidates are pushing back as well against the negative trends that we see. So this is not based on receiving prophetic revelation, having a good dream or vision or feeling, I heard a thus saith the Lord. Instead, it's based on spiritual reflection. And 1 Chronicles 12:32 says of the children of Issachar that they understood the times and knew what Israel should do. In the same way, I feel it's important that we today function like children of Issachar, that we today function in a way that we also understand, what Israel, what is happening in the society today and how we should respond. It's one thing to get excited about dates and times and seasons, and this is the end of this, and it's the beginning of this, and this is the new moment of this and that, whatever. But what are we supposed to do? Even if those things were true, how do we respond? How do we live? So here are three things that strike me as very obvious that are coming this way in 2016. Again, this seems self-evident to me based on spiritual reflection. One is that it'll be a year of deep division, of real polarizing in our society. Now, why do I say that's self-evident? Well, it's a presidential election year. Election rhetoric only highlights the differences between candidates, parties, ideologies, individuals. This year will be no different, but I expect it to be more intense. Now, I also say that because I can't remember a time when nationally we were as deeply divided as we are today. Oh, yeah, during the counterculture revolution, you had the generation gap, which in many ways continues into this day, the gap between the older generation and the younger. But this is a division that goes across the board, not just between age groups, but cuts deeper across the board. Think of a time, can you think of a time when pro-life passions and pro-abortion passions were as intense as they are now? Can you remember a time when our freedoms of speech, religion, and conscience were more threatened than they are today, in particular by gay activism? Can you remember a time when competing policies regarding immigration, regarding national security, were as different and divided among constituents as these things today? So I expect 2016 to be a time of intense polarizing, which also means a time when things will really, really get heavy as far as attacks on what you believe. Are you ready to defend your faith? Are you ready to defend why you believe what you believe? Are you ready to answer tough questions? I expect the pressure to continue. Just like we'll be challenging other ideologies, our ideologies will be challenged. It will be a time of polarizing. But at the same time, I believe it's going to be a time of unifying. How can you both divide and unify at the same time? Well, you're talking about different groups of people. In other words, the more that our views and values come under attack by one sector of the society, the easier it is it's going to be for us as God's people to unify. The easier it's going to be for us as God's people to stand together. The more persecution and opposition increases, the more God's people recognize how much we have in common. In other words, you might not be in close fellowship with the church down the block because they are strongly pre-trib and you're strongly post-trib, and these are really important issues to you. Well, when you now start to come under attack as Christians, you realize, hey, that's a petty difference. There's far more that unites us than divides us. And you begin to work together, pray for each other more, stand together for righteousness, for the gospel. I expect that. And it wouldn't surprise me if some events happen nationally or internationally that further produce unity in the midst of our differences. Even where Americans unify together in the midst of our differences over certain issues of national concern. But it's also a time of unity in that we need to be bridge builders. We cannot simply hold to our views and our values and defend them without at the same time trying to reach out to those who differ with us, trying to reach out to those who don't believe as we believe, trying to establish relationships, as Paul writes in Romans 12, it's reiterated in Hebrews 12, as much as it lies with us, live at peace with others. So it's not just a matter of staking out your views and holding to them and saying, this is what I believe, and this is why I believe it. And those views will, of course, be very divisive. If you passionately hold to protecting life in the womb, that's an important value to hold to and to stand for and to act on. But you have to understand the climate today, that is going to receive hysterical opposition from some quarters. If you simply say, hey, I don't care what the Supreme Court said, I still believe marriage is a union of a man and a woman, expect to be ridiculed for it. So as we hold our ground, we'll be ridiculed, maligned all the more. However, that does not mean that we have to be disagreeable people ourselves. That doesn't mean that we have to be divisive in our personalities. We still have relationships with people. We still have friends, neighbors, family members. How can we build bridges? How can we build bridges, overcome divides, build relationships with people, and share the gospel with them? Those are questions. Easily stated, not so easy to answer and do. And then lastly, I see 2016 as a year of opportunity in that, look, a Donald Trump could not have the popularity he has if not for the volatile situation in the world today, if not for the anti-establishment sentiments that are so strong in politics today. Ted Cruz would probably not have as much momentum as he has. And in other words, different people have an opportunity to rise up in different ways now that they may not have had otherwise. Be on the alert for opportunities like that. Before I go to the phones, and there's more in my article as well, but that's the summary of some of what I see coming in 2016. Before I get to the phones and then bring up the subject of religious censorship or censorship of conservative views, I want to bring this to your attention. The American Principles Project has joined together with Heritage Action for America, which is the action arm of the Heritage Foundation, and FRC Action, the legislative affiliate of the Family Research Council, to invite each of the candidates running for president to sign the following pledge. Quote, if elected, I pledge to push for the passage of the First Amendment Defense Act, which is FADA, F-A-D-A, and sign it into law during the first 100 days of my term as president. Now, what does this amendment say? The gathering concern around whether or not the left will succeed in its ongoing efforts. Oh, okay. I'm sorry. That's the letter that was sent out. The pledge. Okay. Well, I'll continue with the letter. The gathering concern around whether or not the left will succeed in its ongoing efforts to force those who disagree with the Supreme Court redefinition of marriage prompts us to write to you and ask, will you commit to making it a top priority for you to ensure passage of the First Amendment Defense Act in the first 100 days of your administration? FADA protects supporters of natural marriage from punishment by the federal government or its regulatory arms, including the IRS. Quote, the federal government shall not take any discriminatory action against a person, wholly or partially, on the basis that such person believes or acts in accordance with a religious belief or moral conviction that marriage is or should be recognized as the union of one man and one woman, or that sexual relations are properly reserved to such a marriage. The federal government shall not take any discriminatory action against such people who hold to these views. In other words, people like me and people like most of you who are listening. It would prevent the IRS from going after such people as well. And there is a real reason for this. There is a real need for this. So, who are the candidates who signed? Six candidates have signed, Republicans so far. Four expressed support publicly but didn't sign. Four did not sign the pledge and did not respond to a request to indicate support for it. Who are they? We'll tell you when we come back. Also, do you think Twitter will come after religious conservatives and hold a double standard of fairness in its new guidelines? We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I think it should be perfectly reasonable, respectable thing to say. Our culture is better. I believe our culture is better than everywhere else in the world.
The culture of Christians.
I think European and American culture, which is based on Judeo-Christian values, is better than other cultures. I think it's uncontroversial to say so.
All right, I'm going to come back to that story in a moment. It's actually a couple months old, but it's increasingly relevant. That's why I'm bringing it up today. That was a dialogue between Joe Rogan of Fear Factor and MMA Announcing Fame. Apparently he has a big podcast as well. And he's dialoguing with gay conservative Milo Yiannopoulos, who was banned along with a UK Guardian journalist Julie Bindel from participating in a debate on whether or not modern feminists stifle free speech, banned from talking about stifling free speech. I want to come back to that issue in a moment, so that's just a little tease for you. Okay, the candidates who signed the First Amendment Defense Act pledge are Senator Ted Cruz, Senator Marco Rubio, Dr. Ben Carson, Carly Fiorina, former Senator Rick Santorum, former Governor Mike Huckabee. Those are the six I would have expected to have been the first ones to sign. That would have been exactly what I would have expected. Now, it's good for each of them. Good for Cruz, Rubio, Carson, Fiorina, Santorum, and Huckabee. Again, this is to pass an amendment saying that the federal government cannot take action against an individual whose beliefs say, hey, marriage is a union of a man and woman, and sexual relations should be within that context of that marriage. Therefore, if I'm asked to do something that violates my beliefs, moral conviction, religious beliefs, the government cannot come after me because of that. Of course we should have something like that on the books. How could we not? We shouldn't even need it, but we do. The candidates who expressed public support but did not sign, are former Governor Jeb Bush, Senator Lindsey Graham, Senator Rand Paul, and Donald Trump. Again, that's not surprising, those four there either. And then the four candidates who did not sign and did not respond to the request to indicate support, at least at this point, Governor Chris Christie, Governor John Kasich, former Governor George Pataki, former Governor Jim Gilmore, not really surprised with that list either. Perhaps I could have seen Christie or Kasich perhaps signing, or at least being in the second category, I should say. Anyway, just for your information, as you pray about who to vote for, this is an important issue. And the ones thus far who signed and said, yes, we will make this a priority to sign this into law within the first 100 days of their term as president, Cruz, Rubio, Carson, Fiorina, Santorum, and Huckabee. To our friend Chaplain Viviana in Brooklyn, Happy New Year to you. Welcome to the Line of Fire.
Happy New Year, my brother. I hope that this year will have many wonderful and open doors for you. You're doing a tremendous job in raising consciousness and not backing down to political correctness. I appreciate you for that.
Well, thank you very much. The least we can do.
Yes, amen. The Lord said for us to stand until he returns. I'm looking at pros and cons of a particular candidate who has risen in the polls to an extraordinary extent, and I'm wondering, as a Christian, how to discern who would be the best person to vote for, especially when the media wants to prop up one or the other or tear down the other. I'm looking at, for example, Trump. I see that under him, we possibly would have a better chance with, the religious liberty issue, because he wants to, you know, have us celebrating Christmas and doing the things that we need to do, but he will not sign, you know, that act that you just mentioned. We know he'll probably be good in defense of borders, but will he go overboard and then alienate people to the point where it's racism? Because he's made different things talking about Mexicans or people that have mental problems or all Muslims. You have the other pro-life issue, which is, I think, one of the key issues for America not to be judged. And we already started to be judged, but you think, is he really pro-life, and will he put in Supreme Court justices that will really weigh in a positive manner when it comes to life? And, he won't back down from a conflict, but is he a man that has enough of the character to be a diplomat? And is he a sexist? You know, the comment that he made about Carly Fiorino made me cringe. Commander in Chief.
Yeah. So let me jump in. Again, I'll give you my personal views as a ministry and an organization. We don't endorse anyone. I personally.
No.
Right. I personally endorsed Senator Ted Cruz and personally raised reservations about Donald Trump. Now, in favor of Donald Trump, obviously he doesn't back down. A friend of mine said, look, internationally, people could think he's crazy enough to push the button and launch an international war, which would cause them to back down. You know, they thought Reagan might do the same. He's obviously fearless. He's not beholden to one particular donor or anything like that. He speaks what a lot of people are feeling, et cetera. And, you know, he's a social media phenomenon. He's absolutely brilliant at self-marketing. I mean, brilliant at self-marketing. I don't personally think he's a racist, but I'm deeply concerned that he's reckless in his speech. When I look at what Proverbs tells me about a king and a king's wisdom versus someone who's reckless in speech, I see him as very reckless, which to me is exactly the opposite from what I want to see in a commander-in-chief and the most powerful person in the free world. And not only so, when I look at someone like Ted Cruz, he has fought for religious liberties for decades. This is what he did for, you know, most a good portion of his life already. So in other words, he's not talking about, here's what I'm going to do. These are things he has done. And he has a massively consistent pro-life record, whereas it seems at this point, Donald Trump echoes sentiments similar to Roe v. Wade. So if getting new Supreme Court justices in place is really important, the next president could potentially appoint four, then I must have someone who is a strong moral conservative. I believe Dr. Ben Carson would be a strong moral conservative. I believe in many ways Carly Fiorina would be, but not quite on the same level. And Marco Rubio has been a pro-life champion and made very strong pro-marriage sentiments. But one of his biggest donors is a billionaire who is an activist for same-sex marriage, which has concerned some. But the one to me who has the consistent track record in these areas already is Ted Cruz. And although my esteemed colleague Lance Wall now thinks that Donald Trump could be a Cyrus-type figure to turn America, I have my deep reservations. Check out my articles, though, on my concerns about Donald Trump and why I personally endorse Ted Cruz. And I think that will give you further guidance. To me, though, we must have a strong moral conservative to turn America in the right direction.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us today on the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I got a question for you, then some interesting news items. Washington Post today, Jessica Contrera reporting. Here's what you can no longer say on Twitter. In an attempt to limit harassment of its users, Twitter's changing the rules for what you're allowed to tweet. Here's what you need to know. Abusive behavior, once part of an abuse and spam section, has now been devoted to the largest section of the rules. It states, quote, "We do not tolerate behavior that crosses the line into abuse, including behavior that harasses, intimidates, or uses fear to silence another user's voice. You cannot tweet, quote, hateful conduct," which means, quote, "you may not provoke violence against or directly attack or threaten other people on the basis of race, ethnicity, national origin, sexual orientation, gender, gender identity, religious affiliation, age, disability, or disease." Twitter will now attempt to assist people who have threatened suicide or self-harm on Twitter, including reaching out to that person expressing their concern and the concern of other users on Twitter and providing resources such as contact information for our mental health partners. I mean, it's a massive undertaking, but I'm sure Twitter has the resources or the funds to do it. The definition of, quote, "violence" now includes threatening or promoting terrorism. Good. I'm all for that. The rules explicitly state if they are not followed, accounts may be temporarily locked or permanently suspended. Twitter CEO Dick Costolo wrote in a memo that he is ashamed at how poorly Twitter has handled trolls. Quote, "We're going to start kicking these people off right and left and making sure that when they issue their ridiculous attacks, nobody hears them. Everybody on the leadership team knows this is vital." Hey, I'm all for this. Kudos to Twitter for saying they have to crack down here. I mean, It is so absolutely ludicrous, so absolutely ludicrous that social media is used in such abusive, ugly ways. I experience it virtually every day from people that don't like where I stand and what I stand for. And I'm, according to a report here, I'm one of the majority who experience this type of assault. I'm sure I get it more as a public figure who stakes out controversial issues. But in point of fact, this is very common. High-profile hotbeds of abuse, such as the attacks on people advocating for inclusion of women in gaming, better known as Gamergate, are just a slice of the world's largest harassment pie, which targets minorities, religious groups, journalists, people who express political viewpoints, celebrities, gay people, homophobic people, elderly people, like we said, almost everyone. But here's the problem. And National Review's Catherine Timpf went on Fox and Friends to argue that Twitter executives are harder on conservatives than they are on liberals. Ah, that is the concern. And that this policy of trying to make the site a nice, happy place then will make the situation worse. Timpf said, "The language is so vague that you could really get anyone in trouble that you want to." I agree. And that is the concern. So kudos to Twitter for wanting to do something. Concerns about how they are going about it. I mean, look, we know for a fact that Facebook worked carefully with gay activists. Facebook worked carefully with gay activists to set up parameters to make sure that gay sensitivities were adhered to. Because of which, on several occasions, I've been temporarily blocked on Facebook, which right now we've got, what, around 270,000 fans. So it's a very active place for us. We can reach millions of people. We reach millions every week, as many as 50 million in a week through Facebook, with as many as 4 or 5 million actively engaged. It's a great tool that we use. We're glad to have it. But I've been blocked a few times because of complaints from gays and lesbians and others in their camp, only for Facebook to apologize and say that shouldn't have happened. Do you think that there is going to be a restriction of freedom of religious speech on Twitter in days to come? 866-34-TRUTH.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on this first live broadcast of 2016, which I expect to be a year of deep dividing, a year also of unifying, and a year of exceptional opportunity as more things break open in our society. Joey, grab clips number 2 through 4. This is a story a few months back, but I want to discuss it further with you. October 7th, Alex Griswold reported that the University of Manchester Student Union has banned Breitbart editor, so this conservative news editor, Milo Yiannopoulos, and Guardian journalist of the UK publication The Guardian, Julie Bindel, from participating in a debate on whether or not modern feminists stifle free speech. Again, the irony of this is extraordinary. The irony is extraordinary in that you are censoring people from raising an issue of censorship. You know, it's just like radical Islamic terrorists saying, how dare you call us terrorists? We'll kill you. Oh, I think you just identified yourselves as terrorists. Well, we're going to censor your free speech because you're attacking us and saying that we censor. Uh-huh. I would say you're censoring. Bindel was the first to be banned from the British university. The Students' Union has decided to deny this request based on Bindel's views and comments toward trans people, which we believe could incite hatred towards and exclusion of our trans students, they wrote. Bindel, who identifies as a radical feminist and a lesbian, is also a critic of transsexuality and gender reassignment surgery. So she's bad. She's a radical feminist and a lesbian. At first, Yiannopoulos joked about being allowed to attend, saying he'd have to up his game. But sure enough, he was banned soon thereafter. In their statement explaining their decision, the student union called him a professional misogynist and rape apologist. Yiannopoulos is much loathed by feminists and much beloved by their critics, especially in the Gamergate movement. Most recently, he was kicked out of Los Angeles's Slut Walk for challenging its founder and carrying a sign calling rape culture a fantasy. Back in May, a pro-Gamergate event headlined by Yiannopoulos was the victim of a bomb threat. So they were both banned. Now, listen, I am absolutely not claiming to defend every statement that either of these have made or to have read every statement either of these have made. I read something that Julie Bindel said about transsexuality that I agreed with, but I've only read limited parts of Milo Yiannopoulos. But I want you to hear this interchange with him and Joe Rogan. I just found it fascinating. It goes all the way back to September 30th. I had seen it when it happened, seen parts of it, but just raising it now as we come into this new year, and I think that they are real, real issues having to do with freedom of speech and censorship in this coming year. We're going to get hit from every different angle. You say one thing, you're racist. You say another thing, you're misogynist. You say another thing, you're homophobic. You say another thing, you're Islamophobic. You say another thing, you're transphobic. And on the list will go. And many of the accusations are simply false. Many of the accusations are simply seeking to stifle disagreement. I'll play these clips for you in a moment, but listen. A few years ago, GLAAD, which initially stood for the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, they now just go by the name of GLAAD because they don't have as much defaming to fight. And they're constantly monitoring the networks and are there enough gay characters in the movies, enough gay characters in the sitcoms or in the dramas or which network is homophobic and this and that. And, well, they don't have as much work to do. Someone said they've worked themselves out of a job. I nicknamed them, instead of the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Defamation, I nicknamed them the Gay and Lesbian Alliance Against Disagreement because they actually put out something a few years back with 36 names. It has expanded since, called the Commentator Accountability Project, where let's say I appeared on CNN or Tony Perkins appeared on CNN or on MSNBC or Brian Brown of the National Organization of Marriage or Maggie Gallagher for the National Organization of Marriage or some other known conservative leader. We appeared, Peter Sprigg of the Family Research Council, we appeared on one of these secular networks or excuse me, not just secular, Fox is secular as well, but one of these liberal networks. GLAAD did not want us to appear. They did not want people exposed to our point of view. You're talking about censorship. They did not want people exposed to our point of view, period. I expect that to increase, and I expect the pushback against that to increase, and I expect the hypocrisy to be exposed. Well, back to this dialogue with Joe Rogan and Milo Yiannopoulos. Again, it doesn't tie in with the censorship issue, but it ties in with some larger issues because Yiannopoulos is, oddly enough, a gay conservative. He's not the only one of his kind, but he's in the strong minority among those who identify as homosexual. And in fact, let's go back and grab that first clip, okay? Let's grab that first clip, then we'll expand on it. Clip number one, where he is talking about Christian values or Judeo-Christian values being better than the values of other religions, and therefore nations that hold to these values being better in their values. Number one.
I think it should be perfectly reasonable, respectable thing to say that our culture is better. I believe our culture is better
our
than everywhere
culture,
else in the world.
Culture of Christians.
I think European and American culture, which is based on Judeo-Christian values, is better than other cultures. I think it's uncontroversial to say so.
Ah, I think, well, it's controversial, but it's correct. It's controversial, but it's correct. So we go to clip number two, as Joe Rogan takes strong issue with this. And by the way, if you ever listen to his podcast, I've read excerpts, and he speaks freely and uses a lot of profanity. So I'll see edited excerpts, but if you listen, just be prepared to be surprised if you do choose to listen. All right, clip number two.
But what's based on Judeo-Christian values about being a good person?
Well, ultimately, our sense of right and wrong comes from the Bible.
If you think that the only way for a person to have ethics or an understanding of each other or compassion for each other is to rely on ancient myths that are easily scientifically disproven, well, that's what Christianity is.
No, I didn't say that.
I said that the
specific set of values that you have is influenced more than you would like to admit by your Judeo-Christian
yeah, I believe Yiannopoulos is right. And Joe Rogan was overstating Yiannopoulos' position, which he corrected. Well, this leads to an obvious question then. And I'm just playing this because it's fascinating. This leads to an obvious question, which is, if the Bible dictates moral values and you're practicing homosexual, how does that work? So we go to clip number three as the conversation continues.
What you are.
I mean, like, I might take it to extremes.
Who you are. But who you are. Being a gay
that's
man
not who I am.
That's
how
promiscuous.
I behave. What I do.
But that is prohibited in the Bible.
Yes, but I agree that it would be better if I didn't behave like this. And if I could
do
use,
you really?
Choose to be heterosexual,
so you're
I would do so.
Self-loathing homosexual.
No, and I won't have this. So Brett,
because what you're saying is who you are is
no, it's not who
it's
you,
prohibited
it's not
in
who
the Bible.
You are.
Ah, yeah. It's not who he is. It's what he does. The behavior is prohibited, and he says he'd rather not behave like that and rather be heterosexual. What? What? Now it gets more intense. Clip number four.
If I could choose, I wouldn't be homosexual.
Really?
That doesn't make me self-loathing.
So if someone came out with a
doesn't
pill,
make me
a Pfizer, you
no,
don't
it
think
doesn't.
It makes you self-loathing
Absolutely
to
not.
Hate a part of what you
I
are?
I don't hate a part of what I am. I love all of me, but if I could choose to be even better, then I would be.
So you'd be better if you were straight?
Yes.
Wow.
Anybody would be.
If Johnson & Johnson
would be better if
came along and had an anti-gay pill,
yeah,
you would take it.
Well, it would be career suicide, but I probably would, yeah.
Isn't that fascinating? Isn't that absolutely fascinating? I wonder how many feel the same. How many of those who identify as gay and lesbian feel the same? And is he engaging in hate speech for saying that, hey, there are plenty of people who wouldn't even want him to express his position? 866-34-TRUTH. Okay, hang on. Let me check my Twitter feed here, and let's see the poll results. And again, this is not representative of anything except those who happen to see the poll on my Twitter feed. All right, so the first 94 votes is holding steady at 91% believe that Twitter will be unfair in monitoring hate speech and that conservatives will be targeted. Is that merited? Is that concern merited? I think I'm going to write about it. Let's see if I get to write. I've got to finish a book. Oh, in fact, little update for you. I'm writing a book. It's going to be a pretty short book, probably under 150 pages, called Authentic Grace. Just finishing it this week. And it's going to deal with common questions people ask about grace. You say, don't you have the book Hyper Grace yet? That's 300 pages with lots of endnotes, detailed quotes. And this one, I approach things from different angles. There's maybe 10% of borrowed content from one book to the other. It's going to be a brand new book that I think you're going to find super helpful and super edifying. And hopefully will be out in just a few months. It's not listed yet, but we'll keep you posted. So pray as I get that finished in these next few days.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right. What do I want to get into here? Oh, a bunch of things of interest and concern. Okay, I'll touch on this briefly. But I've said that I believe 2016 in many ways will be a year of division, a year of polarizing. And I've said it in many ways that seems self-evident simply based on what's happening with an election year, what's going on in our society. Well, Daniel Pipes has written something very interesting. And today in the Boston Globe, this is Middle East expert Dr. Daniel Pipes. The Islamist movement may appear stronger than ever, but a close look suggests two weaknesses that might doom it, and perhaps quickly. And it explains that one of the issues is division within Islam, infighting within Islam. He said infighting became vicious in 2013 when Islamists abruptly stopped their prior pattern of cooperation among themselves and instead began internecine fighting. Yes, the Islamist movement as a whole shares similar goals, but it also contains different intellectual groups and parties with variant ethnic affiliations, tactics, and ideologies. Its internal divisions have spread fast and far. These include Sunnis versus Shiites, notably in Syria, Iraq, and Yemen, monarchists versus republicans, notably in Saudi Arabia, nonviolent versus violent types, notably in Egypt, modernizers versus medieval revivalists, notably in Tunisia, and plain old personal differences, notably in Turkey. These divisions obstruct the movement by turning its guns inward. Now, here is what has happened, if you're not familiar with this, over the weekend. Saudi Arabia executed 47 people over the weekend. That's how they started the new year, not the new Islamic year, the new Western calendar year. So that's how we look at it. They started the new year with 47 executions, among them a highly respected, outspoken Shiite sheikh. So here is an Islamic cleric in Saudi Arabia, which is overwhelmingly Sunni, whereas, say, Iran is overwhelmingly Shiite and Iraq is majority Shiite. And Shiites are in the minority, the small minority of Muslims worldwide in terms of overall population. The vast majority are Sunni. So there's been an ancient conflict since the earliest generations of Islam between Sunni and Shiite Muslims. But now things have really heightened. They have really intensified. What has happened is that Saudi Arabia has cut off ties with Iran. The Iranians protested publicly. There was outrage in the streets. There was attack, stones thrown at the Saudi embassy in Iran. There are other Shiite populations around the world denouncing the execution of this cleric. They said all he was doing was exercising his free speech to speak out against mistreatment of the Shiites by the Saudi government, to speak out for fairness and equality. And because of that, not for terrorist activities, not for inciting the overthrow of the government, because of that, he was executed. So this is going to probably be a long-lasting intensification of the battle between Iran and Saudi Arabia. And for the most part, they're not fighting against each other directly, as happened when Iraq invaded Iran and they went to war. These are Muslims killing Muslims quite directly in that case, nation to nation. Here, they're doing it through other nations. They are engaging in civil war in Yemen, the Saudis supporting the Sunnis and the Iranians supporting the Shiites. They're engaging in civil war in Syria. Again, Saudi supporting, underwriting the Sunnis, and the Iranians underwriting, supporting the Shiites. So this division is only going to intensify. I don't see either side backing off here. So that's just adding to what Dr. Pipes has written here. These divisions obstruct the movement by turning its guns inward. The dynamic here is ancient. As Islamists approach power, they fight among themselves for dominance. So when the whole world is against you, that's one thing. The whole world is against you and you stake out your territory together. Okay, we're going to fight against Islamophobia worldwide. We're going to fight against sentiments against Islam that they would perceive. We're going to fight against those together. But then the more power they have, the more they now fight amongst themselves for dominance. Differences that hardly mattered when in the wilderness take on great importance as the stakes get higher. So in Turkey, for example, political leader Erdogan and religious leader Gulen, forgive mispronunciation of the name, cooperated until they dispatched their common enemy, the military, from politics. Then they turned against each other. The second area where Pipe sees a weakness, a growing weakness in the Islamist movement is very, very important. Namely, as populists experience Islamist rule firsthand, they reject it. They reject it. It's one thing to believe in the abstract about the benefits of Islamic law, and quite another to suffer its deprivations, ranging from the Islamic State's totalitarian horrors to the comparatively benign emerging dictatorship in Turkey. So what happened in Egypt? The Muslim Brotherhood is voted into power. Yeah, Muslim Brotherhood comes into power. And once in power, they now want to begin to enforce Sharia law and so on. And protests said, we don't want this. We may have talked about this before, but now that we're seeing what it means, we don't want this. There is a growing majority of people in Iran who do not like the leadership of the Islamic Republic, the religious leadership, and feel it's oppressive and suppressive in its religious dominance and forcing people to conform. So Pipe says, should these two tendencies hold, the Islamist movement is heading for trouble. Some analysts already see the Islamist era having ended and the emergence of something new from its wreckage. For example, the Sudanese scholar Haider Ibrahim Ali argues that a post-Islamization era has begun when Islamism's vitality and attractiveness have been exhausted, even among the most ardent of its supporters and enthusiasts. It could well be, this much we know, ultimately Islam will fall before the gospel. One way or another, Islam will not rule the world. Hey, friends, maybe you've been thinking about standing with us in the new year. I'm holding in my hands right now as we speak a really nice leather-like Bible. It is a thin line edition, beautifully formatted in the modern English version. For all those who love the King James, this is the best modern update of the King James available, in my view, better than the New King James. I've been reading it more and enjoying it a lot. It's a $30 Bible. When you become a torchbearer, one of our monthly supporters, and help us with at least $30 a month, it's my thank you gift to you. It's my way of our ministry saying thank you and be blessed with this beautiful new Bible. To stand with us, give us a call, 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978, or go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, click donate. My bottom line today, as divisions increase in America, prepare to hold your ground and prepare to reach out across divides. This may seem contradictory, but I see 2016 as a year of division and a year of unity and a year of opportunity. I'll explain why.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, welcome to 2016. This is your listener-sponsored voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you this first live broadcast of 2016. I'm not taking general questions today. So if you got a question about the Bible or theology or something like that, or you just wanted to ask me a question, not taking general questions, but anything I talk about that touches on any area of interest that you have, by all means, give me a call. So if I touch a hot-button issue for you or something where you want to weigh in or ask me a question, if it has to do with presidential politics, that's on today. If it has to do with race issues, that's on. If it has to do with freedom of speech, that's on. If it has to do with larger spiritual trends coming in 2016, that's on. So those topics, you can feel free to weigh in on 866-348-7884. Okay. I outlined in the first hour some of what I expect to see come in 2016, just spiritual observations based on reflecting and looking and understanding. And to say that again very, very briefly, then I want to dive into some controversial issues. I believe with the election year coming up and with the deep divide already in America, that divide will only increase. That passions on fundamental issues, be it pro-life, pro-abortion, be it freedom of speech versus gay activism, be it immigration issue, be it national security, the sentiments, the passions are going to heat up on both sides. The rhetoric is going to heat up. That means you need to be prepared to preserve your cool and defend your views because they're going to come under increasing attack. And of course, we'll be challenging the views of those we differ with. Let's see what comes to the surface. Let's see how deep and how well defended and well thought out and well considered our views are. It's also going to be a time when we'll unite because of the divisions, meaning the more society comes against us in many of our views, the more society comes against us in terms of many of our biblical views, conservative views, the more that we'll realize how much we have in common with each other. How much we need to build bridges across these divides to work together for the common good. The pro-life movement has united people that would not normally work together. Gay activists attack on religious freedoms that's united people who wouldn't normally work together. I believe we'll have increasing unity in that regard in the midst of the divisions and an opportunity to reach across cultural divides and spiritual divides to build bridges, to interact with those we differ with. Look, I stand against radical Islam, but I want to reach out to my Muslim neighbor. I stand against many of the goals of gay activism, but I want to reach out to a gay coworker. I want to build bridges. I want to build relationships. I want to share the good news. Otherwise, we just polarize. Yeah, my views will be polarizing views, but there's also the human side of it, of building relationships across those divides. And then lastly, I see this as a year of opportunity. It would not surprise me if totally unexpected things happen in the coming months that shift the political or spiritual or cultural landscape so dramatically that suddenly someone who had no voice before has a national voice. Let's be attuned to the opportunities and let's take advantage of them to advance the truth, to advance righteousness, to advance the gospel. All right. Armstrong Williams, well-known conservative voice and the business manager for Dr. Ben Carson, made controversial comments a few days ago. I found these very, very wrong and unjustified. When he said that the only true, authentic evangelical in the race right now is Ben Carson. That troubles me as much as I respect Dr. Carson. We'll talk about it when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks, friends, for joining us on The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH is the number to call. I've got some questions. Is Star Wars racist? A few things I want to talk to you about over the course of the broadcast. Last hour, I talked some about the increasing censoring of freedoms in America. Where is that going? Twitter is going to be cracking down on different types of abusive posts, hate speech, etc. I think what they're doing is excellent. However, I think at the same time, not just what they're doing is excellent, but there are concerns that others have raised that I share that it's so vague that it's going to be very easy to crack down on those who hold to conservative moral values. For example, if I refer to Bruce Jenner rather than Caitlyn Jenner, will that get me banned on Twitter? Will that be considered transphobic or hateful? If I take issue with the Supreme Court decision redefining marriage, will that get me banned? So far, the first 100 votes or so. My question, do you believe Twitter will be fair in monitoring hate speech or will conservatives be targeted? 92% in my Twitter feed say unfair. Now look, full disclosure here, my Twitter feed is not a fraction as big as our Facebook feed. I've got 18.9 thousand followers, so just about 19,000 followers. And the vast majority, you would assume, would agree with me. So this is basically asking conservatives, do you think they're going to be unfair to conservatives? But most of them are saying, yes, they do. 866-34-TRUTH. What do you think of what Armstrong Williams said? This is not what Ben Carson said, what Dr. Carson said, but his business manager, Armstrong Williams. What do you think of his comments on CNN a couple days back that Ben Carson was the only true, authentic, evangelical Christian in the presidential race? What do you think about that? I was taken aback by it. Number one, because there are strong evangelical Christians like Mike Huckabee, like Ted Cruz. I mean, unshakably evangelical with a strong evangelical pedigree, and then others who would not be evangelical but strong conservative Catholics like Rick Santorum and Mark Rubio. They would not be mainstream evangelical but would be popular with evangelicals because many of their views would be fundamentally in harmony with evangelical views. So you have candidates like that. I don't know exactly where Carly Fiorina stands, but another strong religious conservative. And then number two, Dr. Carson's a Seventh-day Adventist. Now, I should have a program on Wednesday of this week where we actually talk about that. Wednesday of this week where we talk about Seventh-day Adventists and their beliefs. I have great respect for Dr. Carson. I believe that he loves the Lord and is committed to the Scripture. But as an evangelical, you would hardly categorize a Seventh-day Adventist as a true, authentic evangelical. There are evangelicals among them, but their views are not in full harmony with mainstream evangelicalism. And some of their views, the fringe views, would be considered heretical. Now, Dr. Walter Martin, famously, in his book Kingdom of the Cults years ago, did not include Seventh-day Adventists as a cult, like Mormons, like Jehovah's Witnesses. And I agree with him on that. I have friends who are Seventh-day Adventists who are born-again believers who hold to basic Orthodox doctrine in many ways. But there are other concerns. My friend Dr. James White has raised the issue. What about the investigative judgment? Do they believe in that? You say, what is that? Let's wait for Wednesday. And my guest Tony Costa, Professor Tony Costa, will be addressing those things on the air. But I was troubled by those comments that Armstrong Williams, I assume, sincerely holds to. And he's a conservative journalist, radio host. As a brother, I'm concerned about that comment and raised my concern publicly over social media, both in terms of the attack on the other candidates, some of whom are staunch evangelicals, and his failure to recognize that a Seventh-day Adventist is hardly the image of a true authentic evangelical, although Dr. Carson may be a true authentic evangelical. 866-34-TRUTH. You can weigh in on that. Oh, I mentioned James White. Do you live anywhere in the Charlotte, North Carolina area? Big news, free lecture, Monday night, January 18th. This will be held at Fire Church, which is right near the Speedway, right near the Charlotte Motor Speedway. So all of you in the area know where that is. I mean, we're talking like a half mile past the Speedway. Monday night, January 18th. And it will be a free lecture, 7 in the evening, What Every Christian Needs to Know About Islam. We'll receive an offering to be a blessing to Dr. White and his work, but it is a free lecture, What Every Christian Needs to Know About Islam. And I can't think of a better person to deliver the lecture than my friend, Dr. James White. That will be Monday night, January 18th. Also, if you're one of our faithful listeners in any of our great stations in North Carolina, be it in Charlotte, be it in Winston-Salem, be it in Raleigh, be it in South Carolina, in Greenville, and any of the stations between those, please join us for our first ever listeners' rally in this area. It will be a special Night to Ignite Vision banquet. Seats are very limited, so we need to hear from you if you're coming. It's a free meal. It's going to be a great night, a special message from the Benham Brothers. I'll be sharing some inspirational words as well. And it is a fundraising event where we give you the opportunity to stand with us and partner with us and find out how you can be involved in major changes in 2016, how you can be on the front lines of bringing about moral and cultural change based on the gospel in 2016. So we'd love to have you as our guest. It's absolutely free. We'd love for you to be there. Go to Night to Ignite, nighttoignite.com, nighttoignite.com. And if you're coming, please let us know. We've only got a little over 3 weeks before the event, and seats are limited. 866-34-TRUTH. We go to the phones. Stephanie in Maryland, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown. I've called before asking about cultural issues, especially on like the homosexual issue. And I have I'm at a church where my pastor just recently, in the last week or so, decided to attend, and his wife participate in what was a homosexual marriage union. He did not oversee it or you know officiate it, but they did you know go out and do the whole thing and shared lots of photos of them with the couple. And my question is, if I wasn't, this problem is I'm on staff at the church. So, my question is that like a deal breaker as far as this? I don't want to leave because I don't want it to cause division, but at the same time, in good conscience, I'm not sure that I can sit under that because it looks at least or appears that it's going in an off direction.
Yeah, well, absolutely. Let me just ask you, what else is preached in the church on these issues? Where does your pastor stand?
You know, he used to say that he was very against, like, homosexuality, love the person that's in it, but, you know, he wasn't for the redefinition of marriage or anything like that. But his daughter has also recently come out, and he hasn't mentioned it to the church as a whole, but he will, like, post photos of her and her girlfriend, just, you know, like, I know that they're trying to be loving and they're very compassionate church, but I'm not sure if we're not being compassionate to a fault in some areas.
Yeah, and, well, you absolutely are. There's absolutely no question that the way you're representing it is being compassionate to a fault.
Okay.
By posting the pictures, he is celebrating something that is sinful and ugly in God's sight. He's celebrating
right.
The fact that, here, let's just say that his daughter was now dating her. Let's say she had a twin sister and they were now dating, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to show love and compassion. Hey, they're gay. What does it matter if they're sisters or not, right? Love
mm-hmm.
is love. Love wins. You have the right to marry the one you want. Well, almost everybody would be appalled by that and how wrong and how ugly. Let's say mm-hmm. he had a son and his son was happily married, had three kids, and his son decided to leave the wife and have an affair with a secretary at work. And now he's posting pictures of the son and his adulterous companion. So you don't celebrate this. You love the people. His daughter may say she's happier than she's ever been and so on, but it's sin. He's a shepherd. He's supposed to be leading the way. He's supposed to be providing spiritual guidance. Look, I am not his judge in terms of should he go to the wedding or not. I'll tell you why I wouldn't do it, why I possibly couldn't do it before the Lord. But there's a message that you send as a leader. I want to continue on that. Stay right where you are, Stephanie.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I am speaking with Stephanie in Maryland about her pastor not just attending a gay wedding, but posting pictures of him with the couple, him and his wife with the couple. And his daughter has recently come out, and now he posts pictures of his daughter and the girl that his daughter is in relationship with. Stephanie, before you leave the church, the right thing to do is to see if you can get an appointment with the pastor and to ask him forthrightly what he believes and to lovingly question what he's done. If he repents and recognizes the wrong, that's wonderful. And the Holy Spirit can deal with him even though you're not rebuking him as an elder. You're simply asking him honest questions and sharing your concerns. You can give him a book like Can You Be Gay and Christian, or just ask him flat out, do you believe that what your daughter is doing is sinful in God's sight? Do you believe that what this couple did is sinful in God's sight? And if he says yes, then how can you support it? How can you celebrate it? How can you announce it? And see, here's the thing. If you say, well, look, we want to be compassionate. We don't want to drive people away. If we say that homosexual practice is sin, we drive people away. If we speak out against same-sex, quote, marriage, we drive people away. So we just won't major on those things. Oh, okay. I don't mean you have to preach on it every Sunday, but here's the problem. Once you reach someone with the gospel, now you're loving, you're kind, you're sweet, they sit down and talk to you, right? Here's the gay couple you're talking to, and they say, okay, we just need to know, in your church, do you believe that our relationship is valid in God's sight, or is it sinful? You still have to tell them it's sinful. It's almost like you're deceiving them, giving them a false impression to draw them in. And then once you draw them in, you're going to tell them the rest of the story. Frankly, that doesn't happen. What happens is once you draw them in, you then compromise all the more. So we tell them, listen, everyone is welcome in our midst. We love everyone. We would do everything in our power to see your lives blessed. But yes, we believe that same-sex relations are forbidden by God and that your relationship is not a valid marriage in his sight. And they'll at least respect you for telling them the truth. And then you may have to keep building bridges. They may feel rejected, hate it. That's when you have to demonstrate you're not hating, you're not rejecting, just you're being faithful to God and faithful to Scripture. The Bible says open rebuke is better than secret love. In other words, better to tell someone the truth than to secretly say, oh, I really care, when you don't tell them the truth. As for attending a same-sex wedding ceremony, the reason that I couldn't do it in good conscience, because by attending, you're either celebrating or affirming. When Nancy and I got married March 14th of 1976, almost 40 years ago now, we invited the local rabbi, both Nancy and I are Jewish believers in Jesus. We invited the local rabbi, who was a good friend of mine and who had become a friend of Nancy's as well. And he wrote back and said he couldn't come because it was not a traditional Jewish wedding. The fact that we were believers in Jesus didn't stop him from coming, but it was not a traditional Jewish wedding, and he felt it was inappropriate for Jews to be married in a non-traditional way. I respected that. We remain friends to this day. That did not put up a wall, nor did we mourn over rejection, because we had chosen to go a certain path that was different than the path that was sacred to him, because of which he couldn't participate. We understood that. I would reach out to the people in advance. I'd say, I'm here as a friend. I'm praying for God's best in your life. I'd like to take you for a meal and spend some time with you. If you need help with anything in your life, I'm here to help. But no, my religious beliefs and moral convictions forbid me from celebrating an event like this, so I will not be able to come.
I have a quick question, though. Like, I'm actually on staff at the church, and it's not just something that would be, taking, like, janitorial or anything like that. It's more, like, involved in getting people, it's welcoming and follow-up. So I have, one of my roles is to get people to come to become members of the church and get them plugged in. And so since this has all come up, I've just been overwhelmed with a feeling that I just can't perform that role under these circumstances, but I don't want to bring any type of division at the same time. So that's where another conflict lies.
Yeah, well, that's totally honorable. Again, I see no way to stay given the stance of the pastor unless he repents, unless he acknowledges his error and says, I'm so sorry. I'm trying so hard to honor the Lord and not drive people away. Look, it's my own daughter. This other couple, they're precious people. I don't want to drive them away, but I realize I've done the wrong thing. I've sinned. Then you honor that, and you encourage him to get some strong people around him that will help him to do the right thing. The fact that other leaders have not confronted him and called him to repentance over this means that either they're afraid to or they agree with him, or he's not responding positively.
From what I've gathered from them, at least for a long time, I don't think that they've fallen on those lines. But recently at that, and then there was another lady that has just been hired that is living with her partner, like a male partner.
They're living together out of wedlock, heterosexuals.
Yes.
Living
yes.
together. All right. So you got, right, you got.
Founded by that, too. And it's once the two of them came up in the same week period, and I just can't even figure out exactly. I can't get past my conscience on that.
No, you don't get past your conscience. That's precious. Guarding your conscience, Stephanie, is what will separate you from compromise and dishonoring the Lord.
Okay.
Not allowing your conscience to be defiled is the very thing that God will bless. It's just like in the book of Job that God commended him for holding on to his integrity. He still holds fast to his integrity. His wife was saying, hey, are you going to hold on to your integrity? Just curse God and die already. Get it over with. He said, no, I've got to do what I know is right, regardless of cost, regardless of how it feels. I have to honor God. I have to hold to my integrity. So, Stephanie, this is the only reason I am where I am today, to the extent God's blessed my life in ministry, is because I've refused to compromise on issues of conscience. Let me say it's a large part of what God has blessed. So be gracious in your demeanor, be honoring. This is obviously a larger issue of moral compromise in the church. It's what I've said for years. The reason we're more accepting of homosexual practice is not so much because we're more tolerant, but because we're less moral. You are seeing it lived out in front of your eyes in the church there. So meet with the pastor, raise these issues about the other couple as well. Say, unless the church renounces these and repents of them, you cannot stay on in staff. And if he says, this is our view, this is where we hold, we want you to stay on, say, no, I can't do that because I'd have to speak against it. That would be divisive. So let's work out a plan for me to leave quietly. And then when people ask why you leave, you say, well, you had differences over the church's moral stance. And you love the pastor, love the church, but do it. God will provide for the finances, and God will plug you in somewhere else where you can bear much fruit. Do me a favor, though. Shoot us a note. Write to us through the website, askdrbrown.org. You'll see a place to contact us. After you meet with the pastor, shoot a note. It'll get to my attention, letting me know what happened when you met, okay?
Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate the encouragement and sound advice.
And Stephanie, a year, two, five, ten from now, it's going to be all the more clear that you did the right thing and that the church, if it didn't repent, really took a wrong turn here. Hey, one last question. How many folks go to the church regularly?
About 600.
Got it. All right, may the Lord have mercy on the leadership and bring them to repentance and clarity, and may the Lord give you strength. God bless you, Stephanie.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, friends, that's one reason why we are on the air, saying what we say, doing what we do. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right. 2016 is here. It is a year where I expect increasing divisions in our society, especially with an election year. Along with that, increasing calls for unity for believers as we must stand together to see God move in our nation as we pray and cry out to him. And even as we vote with wisdom, and I see it as a year of division. I see it as a year of unity. I see it as a year of opportunity, that unexpected things, shaking events, just the landscape that we're in, so unique that people could rise to prominence or have a voice that never would have otherwise. Let us be on the alert, and let us address differences constructively. It's easy when someone reacts on the one side for you to react the opposite way. Here, look, when someone's really pleasant to you, okay, customer service, they do a nice job, and you say, hey, thanks so much, you have a great day. And they say, you have a great day too. Well, it's easy to be nice when someone's nice to you, right? But have you ever gone out of your way to give someone else an opportunity to do something? Like you see they're a little rushed, you say, hey, why don't you get online in front of me? You're in a hurry too, but you realize they're in more of a hurry. And they say, yeah. And they do it. And they don't say thanks or acknowledge you. Like, what? I was nice to them. Why weren't they nice to me? Or, you know, you wave someone ahead of you. Here, pull in ahead of me so you can get out of the parking lot. I'm going to slow down so you can pull out ahead of me, because it's going to be busy for a little while. And they don't wave and acknowledge it. Like, what? They didn't acknowledge it? Well, all the more when someone's downright nasty and hostile, if we reply in kind, we become part of the problem rather than the solution. So we need to keep our eyes, hearts open. And as things divide more, let us not be divisive in our differences. We're going to have a lot of discussion about race. It's just everywhere before us. And Joey, clip number 6, Melissa Harris-Perry on MSNBC. This goes back a couple of weeks, but I'm bringing it up now because we're talking about division in the society. And there is now an increased discussion about race issues, for better or worse, in the society. Listen to what Melissa Harris-Perry had to say about Star Wars.
I have feelings, good, bad, and otherwise, about Star Wars, and I have a lot. I spent the whole day talking about the whole Darth Vader situation. But
really?
You
could?
Yeah, like the part where he was totally a black guy whose name basically was James Earl Jones. Who,
right.
And we were all,
yeah.
And but it, while it, he was black, he was terrible and bad and awful and used to cut off white men's hands and didn't, you know, actually claim his son. But as soon as he claims his son and goes over to the good, he takes off his mask and he is white. Oh, yes, I have many, many feelings about that.
All right, so I am not a Star Wars aficionado, okay? I guess I saw one of the early episodes or something, or maybe in the early days people talking about it, didn't quite get what it was all about. People explaining to me the significance of the spiritual meaning that they were finding and things, and whatever. So I was never a big, big Star Wars person, especially over the years. I haven't been part of the almost cult-like following it's had, in certain ways cult-like following. But Star Wars racist, the Darth Vader presentation, the dark side, does that mean black? James Earl Jones, deep black male voice, now the redeemed Darth Vader, white. I mean, is that how it works? Is there racism in it? Or is that just projecting things from our society into Star Wars? I don't want to major on it, but I thought I'd throw it out for discussion as we talk about divisions that could be coming. And when we come back, some fascinating comments from Sam Harris about dialogue that he can have with the right that he can't have with the left. Who's Sam Harris? One of the most outspoken, influential atheists of this generation. Very interesting comments. We'll be right back.
Hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
I just have to play one quick clip for you here. all right, just about free speech, about censorship, about race, about bias. You know, if you've listened to this broadcast, we tackle the hard issues, and we do it constructively. I mean, nothing is off limits unless it's something we can't rightly talk about on radio or Christian radio. But we'll talk about any issue, but we'll do our best to be constructive. While society's screaming and yelling about it, we'll do our best to talk about it. That's what we try to do here on The Line of Fire. That's why we are your voice of moral sanity and spiritual clarity 5 days a week. Your listener-sponsored voice, I should say. But there is a Huffington Post live interview. This goes back a few months. And there is a feminist, SJW Suey Park. It was a discussion about this campaign to cancel Colbert. And of course, Stephen Colbert and the Comedy Channel, with his typical satire, could offend everybody, but he was doing it satirically anyway. So there was a campaign to cancel him. And I want you to hear, Joey, this is clip number 8. I want you to hear this interaction. I'm going to come back to Sam Harris. It's going to tie in here. But we're talking about a form of censorship on the left where you cannot hold to a differing viewpoint without being branded and put in a certain category, certain class, so that you're not even allowed to speak your view. So you've got to hear this. This is clip number 8.
I was going to say that I feel like it's incredibly patronizing for you to paint these questions this way, especially as a white man. I don't expect you to be able to understand what people of color are actually saying with regards to cancel Colbert. He has a history of making jokes.
Sorry, being a white man doesn't prevent me from being able to think and doesn't prevent me from being able to have reasoned perspectives on things. I didn't give up
totally
my right to be able to have an intellectual conversation when I was born.
I know, but white men definitely feel like they're entitled to talk over me. They definitely feel like they're entitled to kind of minimalize my experiences, and they definitely feel like they are somehow exempt and so logical compared to women who are painted as emotional, right?
No one's minimalizing your experiences. No one's minimalizing your right to have an opinion. It's just a stupid opinion. I mean, it's a misunderstanding of what
you just called
is.
My opinion stupid. You just called my opinion stupid. That's incredibly unproductive, and I don't think I'm going to enact the labor of having to explain to you why that's incredibly offensive and patronizing.
And with that, she got off the air. Yeah, someone just sent me a note. Is she a 4-year-old? Do people not realize how they're embarrassing themselves in doing this? Here, this is Josh Zepps she's dealing with. Huffington Post Live. Is there a website more consistently liberal than Huffington Post? You're going to assume that someone who's on a video discussion on Huffington Post is extremely liberal. They would go after me as a conservative on there. He makes a statement. And she's attacking him. You know, how can he speak about issues of people of color or black men? Well, hang on. She's Asian. She's not black. How can she address an issue of concern for a black American male if she is an Asian female? On what basis can she do that? And then if he's going to differ with her, that's just talking over her. That's just minimizing her view and so on. This is really, really problematic. This is the type of stuff that we see that stifles any potential interaction where the moment I raise my voice or you raise your voice, we are branded as being a certain type of person, and therefore no one's going to dialogue. So listen to what Sam Harris says. He's on the Rubin Report. This aired September 10th of last year, of 2015. It's on the mechanics of defamation. And these are people that would both be considered on the left talking about the difficulty of dialoguing about certain issues, because the moment you say a certain thing, you're now categorized as being a certain person and therefore demonized, and your views misrepresented, rather than let us fairly and honestly address the substance of our differences. So we'll start with clip number 9. Again, Sam Harris on the Rubin Report with Dave Rubin, September 10th, talking about the mechanics of defamation.
People like Glenn Greenwald and Reza have the larger platforms, but there are many people who fit this description where they They seem to imagine that it's fair and intellectually legitimate to misrepresent the views of their opponents as a way of sliming them because they know it's effective. It's like if you can just get something to stick, that's good because the person you're arguing against is unethical in his or her commitments, that this is the end justifies the means, right?
Yeah.
So and I'm noticing more and more, this is obviously not a problem just with Reza or Glenn, but
sure.
This is a larger problem in our conversation with one another, and it seems to be a pathology that's expressing itself on the left politically in a way that I'm not seeing it quite so much on the right.
Right.
I get attacked by people on the right, but they actually, for the most part, do me the courtesy of understanding what my views are, and they attempt me. So you know, Bible thumper like. I don't know, Rick Warren or anyone else like that who I've debated, you know, he understands what my position is, and then he disagrees with it based on his own commitments, and then we can have an honest debate.
Yeah, fascinating, isn't it? This is Sam Harris, who you'd think as an atheist would be attacked all the more heartily by our side. I'm sure he is. I'm sure he gets nasty email from professing Christians and professing religionists that only further his feelings that religion can be dangerous. But he's saying that he can have a dialogue with someone on the right who understands his views and they'll discuss them. Whereas others on the left misrepresent the views, in his view, knowingly. All right, just listen to a little more. I found this interaction fascinating. Clip number 10 continues the discussion.
I mean, this is the thing that's so poisonous. It's the, and again, unfortunately, I encounter this more on the left than elsewhere. Everyone on the left at the moment seems to be a mind reader, right? What they're trying to detect in you evidence of a view, which you claim you don't hold, but the moment they can string together anything you've said that seems to align up with something they want to find in you, they will hold you accountable to that misunderstanding, and no matter how much you try to take their foot out of your mouth, the mere effort itself is going to be counted against you. You're just someone who's in denial, or you don't really understand how racist you are.
Yeah, I think he's exactly right. We recorded a segment last week on the air that we'll have out as a video probably sometime this week. My letter to a black professor responding to his letter to white America, where I differ with his charges of racism, not that they don't exist, but they exist on the level that he says they exist. And to deny that, to differ with him, is now to be in denial about what's really there. That would be the viewpoint. I tell you what, I so find this interesting and accurate in the analysis by Sam Harris here. I want to play one more clip. We'll go to the last one, clip number 12. Again, listen to what Sam Harris and Dave Rubin are talking about here. I think it is, as they say in Australia, spot on.
What I'm particularly interested here is that I see this on the left, too. I'm on the left.
Yeah,
so I care more about the left. Mm. To me, the right went over the deep end already. But I want to bring the left back into some sort of sane middle ground. So what do you think is actually going on here? I had Dr. Gad sat on a couple weeks ago, and he said that basically this is just the age-old thing where you go for the intellectuals first. So someone like Reza, I think probably can't really, I know you have debated him, but can't really defeat you, so to speak, in a debate. So then he has to go to this because, as you said at the beginning of all this, 40% of this stuff just sticks, right? You say racist, well, now 40% automatically believe you're a racist.
Yeah. The problem with this is that it works. It's very depressing, but it works. And there really is no way to respond adequately to it. It's not adequate because a lot of people just don't care what the truth is. They just like the fact that you can destroy your opponent's reputation by calling him a racist.
It's true. It's very true. Very interesting to me that Sam Harris and David Rubin and yours truly would be in deep agreement on that point. 866-34-TRUTH. Let me grab one quick call before we go to the break. Stephanie in Chapel Hill, North Carolina, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I was just calling to say that it's a really interesting conversation. I'm African-American, and I actually teach about a lot of different images in movies, books, and how African Americans have been portrayed. Mm-hmm. And I can understand why the professor with whom you speak would take that particular tone and have that level of anger, because it's hard when you're in this kind of environment in the United States to decipher whether or not white people are deliberately trying to demean African Americans, or if it's just something that's so ingrained that it just happens that these are the go-to images and they don't even realize they're going to them.
All right, tell you what, stay right there. I want to hear more of what you have to say. All right, so stay right there. We got a break. And Stephanie, you get to finish this. You've got my interest. We will be right back on the Line of Fire.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks so much for joining us on the Line of Fire as we talk about major issues coming into 2016, things that could divide us. How can we hold our ground on our views without being divisive in our nature and character? A question came up about racist portrayals in movies. And is that an issue we have? Do we even have it in Star Wars? So Stephanie from Chapel Hill weighing in. By the way, Stephanie, where do you teach on these subjects?
I teach at North Carolina Central.
Got it. Okay, so on the college level.
Yes.
So you were saying that in your view that there obviously is inequality or bias in many of the images on movies. You haven't commented on Star Wars in particular, but many images in the movies, and is it unintentional or is it intentional? That's your bigger question. So that's where we had a break. So back to you.
Right, and you just don't know. When you're looking at the history and what has been intentional and what we know has been intentional, and then today, we don't know. And then you have, for example, we know when Star Wars, the original Star Wars came out, and they're casting people in these roles, well, we know that an African-American wouldn't have been in the position of Luke Skywalker. We can be assured of that because the box office ticket sales were too important to cast an African-American. But you have James Earl Jones and his voice for Darth Vader. So was it that his voice just fit the evil character, or was it that as the clip that was Chupac, the play, the lady that was in the clip, was it that someone said, well, you know what, let's have this black character in this type of role, and it just became, something that they couldn't visualize as a white man actually being. And I have a more recent example for me, and this is how difficult it was for me to even enjoy a Christian movie, and that was War Room. When I've seen the other movies that the Kendrick brothers have done, I saw white women who were portrayed in a certain way, handled in a certain way. This movie that starred a black woman and a black man, the black woman has smelly feet. I've never seen that with a white woman. They don't do those types of images. That's something that has come from the past with black women about our feet and our hygiene and all of those things. And it stays throughout the movie. And to me, it was not necessary. It wasn't even something that they explained. It was some sort of joke. Then they have the scene where she comes downstairs. She knows she's been in her war room all night. She's not aware that she has bad breath. She's not aware that her hair is all over her head. And that's some sort of comedic moment. And I haven't seen movies where white women have had issues with hygiene. And she's a woman of a certain type of wealth, yet she doesn't know how to get rid of foot odor. And even when she gets the foot powder, it's still an issue. And that's supposed to be funny for us. And the black man was really a glorified drug dealer. That's really what he was. So even when black people have money and have a certain lifestyle, we still have hygiene problems, and we still are glorified drug dealers. Mm.
So
and
Stephanie,
I could not enjoy the movie because of that, because I felt as though those things were not necessary. They didn't do those things to their other white characters in their movies.
Right. So my question, I didn't see War Room. Actually, I haven't seen any of the Kendrick Brothers movies as popular as they are and as much as I've planned to watch them at one point. I don't watch a lot of TV. It normally be sports if I watch it. But, you know, I think of series that I've read about where, like, the predator is a white male, and maybe the cop that's chasing him down is a black male, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And just, you know, just on the little observation that I have, the box office popularity of a Will Smith who can be a hero in a movie and maybe he's got a white nemesis who's the evil guy, I don't look at that as trying to set the record straight or equality or something like that. So you've looked at this more carefully than I have, for sure. Okay, 100 to 1. So I'm not challenging, I'm asking a question.
Mm-hmm.
If there's anything out there that's systemic or widespread, I'm not seeing it. I could make a case for the opposite anecdotally. So is this representative or just an exaggeration of the anecdotal? I'm asking not to challenge as much as to clarify.
Right, and I understand. And I'm not much of a television buff either, or movies, but I do watch them because I teach about images and about how they affect people and what's been in our literature, what's been in our movies and television. And what I would say to that is, if you are a race of people, like African Americans, who have had people use images to put you in a certain category, you're lazy, you have poor hygiene, you're not as smart, all of these different things, and it's happened over and over again, that means our water has a lot more mud in it, dirt in it to make mud. The waters are muddied a lot more. So if you add these other images now and you haven't done anything to purify the water that much, okay, there are those movies with Will Smith, you could argue Wesley Snipes and some of these other people, but that's not enough of a purification system to cleanse all of the things that have already been there, because there are plenty of people who are out there, and they come out when you have a Hunger Games, the first one, and you have a black character who's cast, and they don't think that this character should be black. Those people come out. Or you have, in this latest Star Wars movie, you have one of the good guys, quote-unquote, cast as a black man, and they don't think he should be a black man. It should be a white man.
And by the way,
you don't have as much mud or dirt in the water.
I understand. I'm just jumping in, Stephanie. You're articulate, mm-hmm. and I want to give you the maximum time to speak on this. I'm out of time, but I think in the original Star Wars, there was one of the popular characters was black also, correct?
Han Solo.
Yeah, okay.
Orlando Calrissian, that's who it was, yes. It was Billy Dee Williams.
Okay, right, so you even know more of the names there. And I had never heard the accusation about black women and poor hygiene. I'm not saying it's not there. I'm not saying you're wrong about that. It's just something I'm not aware of. But listen, this leads to a further conversation, which is, can you be middle of the road, not see color, and that's fine, or because of past problems, should there be heightened sensitivity? And that's what you're saying about the waters being muddy. So this, I've got to run now. But Stephanie, this is a conversation that I want to continue with my listeners. Because of past history, because of current issues, can you just say, I don't see color at all, and therefore, it's whoever gets this role, whoever's there, it's got nothing to do with color? Or must we be sensitive to the past and to present tensions when casting and doing things like that? That's a discussion to have. What's the right line to draw here? So listen, got to run, but thank you for the call. Sorry I can't get to more calls, but we've got a lot of time on our live talk radio to continue the discussion. Hey, friends, if you become a torchbearer, if you become a monthly supporter this week only, there is a beautiful leather-like thin line edition of the Modern English Version, which is the number one update of the King James, in my view, that's been done. Really excellent translation. It's our gift to you as you become a torchbearer, helping us with $30 or more per month. It's our thank you gift. Go to askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org. Click on donate. My bottom line today, the issues that divide us are the very things that must bring us together for discussion and dialogue.